Hello, I'm Matt Harmon, and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast, joined by Dalton Del Don here on the Midweek Show. Dalton, it's a special 2020 recap edition of the Love to See It, Hate to See It stats-based podcast. I'm hyped to talk to you today, man, but what's going on with you?
As I was complaining to you backstage, I faced Stephon Diggs in the finals last night. Entered up 23 points. You know, he's pretty quiet through one quarter, feeling good, and then that quickly turned. So fitting into a frustrating fantasy season for me. How about yourself, Harmon?
I don't know about you. You might feel differently than me, but I really care more about, like, number one, the players that I like doing well, and also like my predictions being good this year, as opposed to my actual fantasy teams. Like, we all know that no one cares about our teams. And obviously, like, I'd like to win some leagues. I'd like to win some money when that's on the line too, but more so care about like my predictions being correct. So the fact that in the last two games of the regular season in fantasy, or the playoffs in fantasy football, we got Davante Adams going off on Sunday Night Football, and Monday night we get Stephon Diggs going off. I'm like, you know what? That's good. That's good for me. I'll take that as my ending. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I know Diggs is your guy, and I've never doubted you as far as a route runner. He's awesome, but I did question his fit year one in Buffalo, and we'll talk more about Josh Allen and moving forward later in the show. But wow, what an awesome first year those guys ended up having, and for fantasy managers and for the Bills. I mean, they're an exciting team moving forward.
Yeah, they're like must-see TV. I think they're the team that has the best chance to give the Chiefs a push in the postseason. Well, depending on what the hell's going on with the first team we're going to talk about here, I think we can get to that. But like, yeah, Buffalo, it's unbelievable. They do everything right. They're like, they really are like an analytics fantasy dork's dream, where they don't even really try to establish the run. They just throw the ball. They spread the field. They do all of the motion, the play actions, all of that stuff really well. So they're such a fun team to watch. And by an extension too, you know, Brian Daboll, I hope we get some clarity on whether it's Brian Daboll, whether it's Brian Daboll, Brian, well, whatever. Anyways, their offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, he's going to be a guy that I think is a lock as a head coach next year. And there's a lot of fun landing spots for him too. So we'll get to see that evolution too. And also, it's funny, I kind of really forgotten that he's been an established figure in the NFL for a long time, but it is hilarious where every once in a while, when you talk about the great coaching that's gone on in Buffalo this year, you know, some Chiefs fan will hit you up and be like, yeah, I remember when he was the offensive coordinator of the Tyler Thigpen / Brady or Brody Croyle, like, Chiefs team or whatever. I'm sure I'm getting the quarterbacks wrong, but it's been a hideous run of quarterbacks in Kansas City pre Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. So anyways, yeah, it's just always funny. Like, some of these offensive coordinators, they go through they don't all just become Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan, where they're these master hits right away. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time for those guys as well.
Yeah, the coaching has been fantastic. It was surprising to see that they ranked toward the bottom of the league in fourth down conversions when the graphics showed during the Monday night game, after they picked up three of them in the first half. But then I realized, oh, that's just because they're too busy picking up first downs before they even get to fourth down. I think they were setting record for the amount of first downs lately they're getting in game. So they're just so efficient. The play action. Brian Daboll, however you pronounce it, definitely the next head coach in his future. And I'm with you. They're the team that's really the more intriguing one, certainly more so than, say, the Steelers, right?
Yeah, let's get into the Steelers, because I'm still tilting about what went down in that second half. And not that, like, I wasn't happy to see it, because I was happy to see it, but it took until week 16, but the Steelers finally throw the damn ball downfield. This doesn't really matter for week 17 if you're playing in daily fantasy, or if you, for whatever reason, still have your fantasy championship in week 17. And this is why you shouldn't have your fantasy championship in week 17, because Mason Rudolph is going to be starting. He'll be playing for the Steelers in week 17. So we have no idea if that's going to really carry over. But, you know, I'm still looking at the full season, because obviously I had to check in on my guy, Diontae Johnson, who in basically 12 games has 828 yards and 7 touchdowns, but 9.7 yards per catch. You've got Juju Smith-Schuster with, he might catch 100 balls this year if he plays in week 17. You wouldn't guess it, because he only has 766 yards on the season. He has like a running back type of stat line, like a super efficient running back, but nevertheless, you get my point. Anyways, last week, This comes in thanks to Warren Sharp. Roethlisberger was 8 of 14 for 170 yards and 2 touchdown passes on balls that traveled more than 10 yards past the line of scrimmage. His previous season high this season was 157 on such throws, this per Sports Info Solutions. So they really let it rip in the second half. Dalton, where the hell did this come from, man? I'm still like weirded out by it.
Yeah, it was a weird game just in general. I mean, it looked like they were dead, down 24-7. They had as many rushing yards at halftime, 4, as the Colts had tackles for losses. And it was crazy, the stat they kept saying, only the Jets have a higher 3-and-out percentage this season on offense than the Steelers' offense. Not sure why Claypool's only getting 6 targets and Juju and Deontay are combining for 27. But yeah, then the second half, they're able to do this. I mean, Big Ben supposedly tweaked his knee week 13, but I don't know what's prevented them from at least trying this before the second half and being forced to do so when down. But it was nice to see they're still capable of it. I don't really know how to value them for next year, if you can ask me that, because What's the quarterback situation going to look like? Another year older, Big Ben. My son's name's Mason, but he's certainly not. Rudolph is not the answer for Pittsburgh. That'll definitely be ugly. You knew something was weird there when the spread opened. Browns -7. The writing was on the wall that Pittsburgh was definitely not going to bring their A game this week. But I don't really care about the drops. Like, I'm sure you would agree with Deontay Johnson. He has a bright future in the league, but it's a weird season in Pittsburgh. I have no idea how to properly evaluate it. The team can't run. Nice to see that they have at least the ability to throw the ball downfield. But man, come postseason, I will be loading up on my pools and whatnot on Bills players over Steelers. I just really think they have one and done written all over them.
I agree. The only thing is, I would have absolutely locked that in going into the second half of last week's game. I would have been like, yeah, they're one and done. They could lose out. Like, they started 11-0. They might be 11-5. You know, like, that looked like it was that type of operation for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, the one thing that I get hung up on is my thought is they're not throwing the ball downfield. They're doing this extremely short passing game because Ben's arm is cooked. That was my only thought as to what this could possibly be, because Johnson can run downfield routes. Like, I think part of the reason that he's dropped so many passes is they've fed him, you know, like 14 targets per game, and 10 of them have been these 2-yard crossers or drags that get there in less than 2 seconds. That's horrible. You can't adjust to that, number one. Number two, you're just going to get slammed every now and again. You're not going to move the football that way. So I thought, okay, they must be doing this because that's all Ben can do. And obviously Juju's going to get fed in that area because that's where he functions best, as an over the middle big slot type of receiver. But then they opened the damn thing up in the second half versus Colts, and Ben looks like he's throwing some absolute dimes out there. You know, Johnson's hauling him in, Claypool's hauling him in, even Juju he can be used as a vertical weapon when he's in the slot. So I don't know if it's Ben was just so insistent on, like, I don't want to get hit, that then the offensive coordinator, Randy Finkter, he like just specifically designs this very hyper-focused approach. But if Ben can throw these type of balls, then they have a much higher ceiling in the postseason, because then, you know, their defense is good. Like, if they can build a lead with their passing game, which they certainly can, then their defense and TJ Watt can tee off on players. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick can be that ball hawk in the secondary. So for this year, I'm going to just leave open. I tend to agree with you, but I'm going to leave like a slight opening that they could be better in the postseason than we think of, because they showed this against a good defense, by the way, in these two quarters to end week 16.
Yes. Okay. So the only counter I'll come at you is the Colts defense has been fading a little bit, for what it's worth. True. The last 3 weeks, they're bottom 10 in yards per play. But I think most importantly, it's just that we saw that they're physically capable of throwing the ball downfield. That's more important than whoever they were playing. So yes, this probably does give them a little bit more upside entering the postseason than certainly entering halftime, when it looked like maybe Big Ben had to be benched. So yeah, certainly it was something nice to see, and two quarters of, okay, they're not done yet.
Totally agree. And yeah, when it comes to next year, I feel like it's impossible to really project the Steelers at this point. You know, when it comes to Deontay Johnson, yeah, you shouldn't care about drops. Like, separation is the trait that you care about, right? And we know that Johnson gets open at all levels of the field. And targets are generally an indicator of player quality. Like, sure, you can sometimes have a guy like Kelvin Benjamin that gets fed an absurd amount because there's no one else around him. But that's not the case in Pittsburgh. And that means that the Steelers coaches and Ben Roethlisberger think that Deontay Johnson's very good. Now, I don't know that he's going to get this much volume next year because I feel like the wheels fell off this offense at different points. And like, he's the only thing that was really working sort of in that degree. But Juju might be gone next year. He might not be back in Pittsburgh. It might just be Johnson, Claypool, and, you know, a few more years of James Washington. So there's a chance the volume still could be there. But like you said, we don't know what the quarterback situation is going to look like. Ben says he wants to come back for next year, but we'll see we don't know what that version of Ben Roethlisberger looks like. So yeah, there's a lot up in the air there. Let's talk about another offense that's a bit confounding. Unbelievably, the Bucks just, I've never seen a team just drop a hammer so hard in a single half. I had been saying on this podcast that the Bucks can't string together four consistent quarters of football. Didn't matter on Saturday. They go against a dead in the water New York Detroit Lions team, and this comes from John Ledyard on this note here, which I think is interesting because this is something that Brady's been criticized for. Since week 11, Brady is 15 of 24 on 20 plus air yard throws for 505 yards and 6 touchdowns. All of those are top marks among quarterbacks in that span. Obviously, Brady is not a top 5 fantasy quarterback. He's QB7 he's QB8 on the year because he doesn't have any rushing upside. That just goes to show you how important rushing is in fantasy football. But what did you think of that Bucks offensive explosion against the Lions in week 16?
Yeah, I guess they do deserve credit for four quarters together because of the final two against the Falcons and then the first two, Brady's last four, are like crazy. Throwing for like nearly 700 yards or something. But man, what a just an explosion with everyone watching the standalone game. The Lions defense is pathetic.
I don't know. Maybe not everybody.
Yeah,
early in the morning, hungover after Christmas or something.
That's
I don't
fair,
know. Maybe a few
fair.
People decided, I'll, on the West Coast at least, I'll sleep through or not pay attention to the Lions with a graveyard coaching staff too. I mean, what a train wreck.
This Lions defense is so bad. They have allowed the most yards per play over the last 3 weeks, obviously partially because of facing this good Tampa Bay offense, but they have the Lions defense has this great combination of allowing the most rushing yards this season and the highest YPA on against passes. So that's a pretty awesome combo there. Blaine Gabbert, I believe, threw his touchdown pass on his second pass entering this game.
I think it's the first one.
It's ugly either way. So yeah, I mean, it's just really bad Lions defense, but props to the Bucks who have looked pretty good, and they certainly have upside entering the postseason. And you nailed it with Brady's fantasy stats. It's just remarkable how important it is to get a QB that runs in this day and age, and it's just so important. And Brady is the best example of that. All these TDs he's throwing, but with no rushing stats, there's just you can't even crack the top five these days. So that's something everyone has to have at the top of their minds at draft tables next year.
Yeah, the perfect example of that is quarterback 7 on the year is Ryan Tannehill. And obviously from an efficiency perspective, Tannehill's an incredible passer. We know that because of what they do in that offense. But just from a passing stats perspective, Brady has him beat by 4 touchdowns. He has him beat by a good amount of yards. But the rushing stats, 3 rushing yards for Tom Brady and 228 and 5 touchdowns for Ryan Tannehill. So yeah, that just goes to show the rushing stats are huge. They're obviously incredibly important. So the Bucks, like you said, are perfect thing that you noted there. They have a lot of upside going to the playoffs. I think they're the literal definition of a wild card team. Like if they get bounced in an ugly one game showing, wouldn't be surprised. But if they're playing in the divisional round or even maybe in the NFC championship round, because they get hot. That's totally within the range of outcomes. Like that is encapsulated by their last two games, I think, is just the range of outcomes there. And like you said, the four quarters that they've put together between the second half against the Falcons and the first half against the Lions, two of the worst defenses in the NFL, that should be noted. Even if the Falcons have gotten a little bit better, they might not necessarily face that type of stop unit in the postseason, but all of these guys we know, like when they're on the same page, it's tough to stop a wide receiver trio like this. I mean, if Antonio Brown is starting to kind of round into form after not playing football for so long, yeah, then you're talking about one of the best receivers to ever play the game as your third option, and Chris Godwin is healthy and clicking at the right time. This is another team we have no idea what they're going to look like next season, though, because there's a lot of guys that are on the last year of their deal.
Yeah, and Ronald Jones should be back this week if you're playing week 17 for some reason. And boy, Rob Gronkowski is, I did not expect him to stay healthy all season long, you know, turning from that exodus at his age and his physicality. So I could see them going into New Orleans. You're right, and surprising. I could easily see them losing week one in the playoffs. But an interesting note is I don't believe Aaron Rodgers has ever had home field in the championship game. So a Florida team having to go to Green Bay to play there, that would be fun to see Brady go in to play the snow in a championship game against Rodgers.
Yeah, no, that would be sweet. But it's and I think Brady too, by the way, he's not the type of guy where it's like Drew Brees going into Lambeau in the snow and like, oh, yikes, that really has
been worried.
I think from a physical perspective, I think Brady's looked great this year. Like, I think those deep stats show you, too. Yeah. The arm strength is still there. The placement on deep balls is still there. It's more been he's learning in a new system, and there hasn't always been a complete gelling there between him and Bruce Arians that I think has led to some of the volatility in this passing game.
Yeah, deep passes are super impressive at his age, what he's doing, man. It really shouldn't be understated. I mean, he's what he's doing to simply no human being has ever done at this stage of their life.
Yeah, exactly. It's obviously unprecedented, and he's the greatest of all time, blah, 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 blah. let's move on to another team they're surging late. It's almost kind of – I know a lot of Cowboys fans. I'm friends with a lot of Cowboys fans, unfortunately. Ugh, you hate to see it. Shout out to my brother-in-law for getting me to be friends with this many Cowboys fans. Anyways, point is, they have mixed feelings about this late season Dallas surge, because they're sort of a twinge of what could have been had the defense rounded into form at any point. Had Dak obviously played a full 16-game season, even if they were losing games with Dak because of the defense. There's definitely just a little bit of a bittersweet twinge, but nevertheless, the Cowboys are on a hot streak. What do we make of that right now, and how are we spinning it forward? Not just to pretend, you know, hate to say it, this team could win the NFC East. Like, they could be playing a playoff game. What do we make of that, and also going forward into 2021?
Yeah, I was going to say, this team, it's not like they're blowing wins like my Niners. What are you doing costing you draft slots? I'm glad you guys are playing hard for the coach, but the Cowboys might win their division. So, yeah, I was surprised. I did not expect that. I thought the Eagles were going to win that game last week. They're up 14-3. Fletcher Cox leaves, and then suddenly the wheels fall off. Cowboys completed the most 50-yard passes in that game in an NFL game this season, 3, matching their whole total from the season previous before. Zeke suddenly looked better than Tony Pollard. I don't know, man. NFL is tough to predict. It's very frustrating. I'm not a Cowboys fan, but I loaded up on CeeDee Lamb and Blake Jarwin in all fantasy drafts. CeeDee Lamb was definitely my number one. But I drafted him in round 7 and 8. I was just super aggressive with him. And I think he would have probably had a lot better year if Dak Prescott had stayed healthy. So Prescott and all these Cowboys guys are going to be some of the more interesting players to rank next year. Certainly Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, because the situation, I mean, that Cowboys team, you don't have to squint too hard to project them to lead the NFC in scoring next year. And if he's going to be their feature back because of his contract, I mean, but I don't want him. So I don't know. What are you doing with him, Harmon?
Yeah, I don't really want to draft Zeke. at the same time, like you said, it's a back that has a proven track record that's attached to what you, like you said, could be one of the best offenses in the NFL. That being said, I'm starting to, with these running backs particularly, I want to be Bill Belichick. I want to be a year too early than a year too late. So if 2021 is Zeke's like final ride or whatever, I'll be okay with not having any of it when the wheels fall off in 2022, because at some point that's going to happen. He wasn't even that efficient from, you know, a yards per carry basis when Dak Prescott was playing. Like, the pass catching buoyed him. Some of the scoring did. But and that's going to happen when you throw the football as much as they did. Like, let's not forget that Dak Prescott was on pace to not just break the passing yardage record, but to shatter it by over 1,200 yards. Like, that is certainly within the range of outcomes next year, because all of these guys, Cooper, Lamb, Gallup, whether it's Blake Jarwin, whether it's Dalton Schultz, Jarwin got a contract extension, so you'd assume he's going to be back as the starting tight end. All of these guys are going to be back there, and there could have been a much higher ceiling for this wide receiver trio. Like, I think all of these guys could have crossed 1,000 yards. But as it stands right now, all three of them have 5 touchdowns. if Gallup gets three targets, I think he's going to get three targets in week 17. All these guys will go over 100 targets on the year. There's still a huge ceiling for this passing attack. I know I personally will be hyper tempted to just run this baby back next year. You know, take Gallup where he's going in drafts. Take CeeDee Lamb where he's going in drafts. And I think Gallup's the guy who could be the big value there. And we've seen his explosive potential. And also shout out to Andy Dalton too, because this is a player he's stabilized this passing attack. I feel like we talked about it a little bit going into, I know I was on this narrative on FFL in week 16. This passing offense, if you'd still thought of it as just a completely broken mess without Prescott, you were kind of missing the boat, because since he's been back in week 11, obviously now this is including the game that they just had against the Eagles. Dalton has a 101.9 passer rating. He has 13 touchdowns, 4 picks. He's completing about 67% of his passes at 7.3 yards per attempt. So there's some stabilization there. He's made himself some money as a top tier backup. Let's not pretend he's going to be a starting quarterback somewhere next year, but he's shown that even a stable quarterback can make this one of the best offenses in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm running it back next year in fantasy drafts for sure. Their O-line has even been banged up this year. I believe Zach Martin may miss this important week 17 game. I'll be definitely Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, and Blake Jarwin. Don't forget, he's pretty good. This offense does throw to the tight end. So, and their defense is going to be bad again. I mean, all these contracts tied up to these skill position players on offense, including probably, you know, this theoretical Dak Prescott. I don't expect some big sudden change in their defense being poor too. So I think that's going to be all conducive to a nice setup for a bunch of points, a point scored both for the Cowboys and for your fantasy teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's also talk about, since we're talking about NFC East, and this is, look, we're going to have to sit through Sunday Night Football with the damn Washington football team taking on the Eagles for the division crown. I think Dallas can beat the Giants, which would mean the Cowboys are going to be scoreboard watching. They'll be just watching their TVs on Sunday Night Football when Washington goes against the Eagles. Now, the biggest reason I was in on all these Cowboys receivers in week 16 was not that, well, obviously they're great players. Dalton has stabilized the offense. We know all that. But also, this Eagles secondary is a complete joke. And the problem for Philadelphia, why they've just had such a snake bit season, is when one thing gets fixed, another thing breaks. You know, it was that way even in training camp. Like the offensive line, the receivers, they all are getting hurt. Then here late in the season, their secondary starts to fall apart when they finally got what looks like a decent solution at quarterback. So what do you think? By the way, also, this is just comes in from Tom Pelissero right now. He said that Ron Rivera is optimistic Alex Smith can start Sunday, but they're not sure. And, you know, it's about functionality, not soreness, according to Pelissero. So we'll see what happens there. But let's just say in a hypothetical world, Smith suits up for Washington. Do you think Washington or the Eagles win that game?
I'm leaning toward the Eagles here. I know obviously Washington needs it more, and Eagles secondary has been bad. The Cowboys just relentlessly picked on that undrafted free agent, Michael Jack. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But I don't think Alex Jaquette. Okay. I don't think Alex Smith can do the same. And Terry McLaurin, is he healthy? So I don't think it's going to match up here. And I'm all in on Jalen Hurts. I actually hope that he has a poor game here to kind of suppress his price a little bit at draft tables next year. But yeah, I'm all in on him. And I actually lean Eagles here, coming off just such a dud in the second half. But should be a fun game to watch on Sunday night. What do you think? What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think whether Terry McLaurin plays is going to be big because he obviously missed last week. I don't know. Do we know anything about that injury anymore from that?
Yeah, I just know he was doubtful last week, and I don't think there's updates. The lack of info in early week this year has been frustrating. I had him on multiple teams too. So, but poor end of the year for him, man. Bad. A couple games, back-to-back games, fewer than 25 yards, and a missed fantasy championship week. So frustrating for McLaurin, but he's another guy I would be happy to run it back with next year. I mean, the quarterback situation can't be worse.
Oh, totally. But from this particular one, this week, like if he plays, he can be the guy that runs through that secondary, you know, this coming week. If it's Alex Smith back there. I mean, Taylor Heinicke, obviously Dwayne Haskins is gone. He's been released by the team. Heinicke is a guy that is not going to be throwing balls downfield. Alex Smith, not necessarily the greatest downfield thrower either, but I think you'd still prefer Smith to be back there than Taylor Heinicke. But we'll see what happens. I think I'm going to favor Washington in that game if Smith is back there. If not, though, yeah, we could easily be seeing Dallas the Cowboys, baby, in the playoffs, which is a wild ride from where we were. And really nothing to hang your hat on because this division is a total train wreck. Let's move on to the things we hate to see. And number one is, you might not hate to see this because you're an NFC West guy, but the Rams offense is totally sinking. Right now, Jared Goff has an average depth of target of 6.5. Only full-time-ish starters below him are Alex Smith, Drew Brees. It's tied with former Washington football team quarterback Dwayne Haskins. It's lower than Ben Roethlisberger, which is, it's not what you want. You don't want to be lower than Roethlisberger on that stat. So Goff obviously he's not going to play week 17, right? It's going to be John Wolford as their backup quarterback. He's probably going to start week 17. The Rams could find themselves outside looking in on the playoff picture because of this. But what do you make of Jared Goff? Because even before the thumb injury against the Seahawks, he was not playing well. And all he's asked to do is basically not screw it up for the Rams offense. But sometimes he screws it up, and that's not what you want.
I kind of liked Jared Goff in fantasy, Superflex, or just whatever, later even in non-Superflex. But ultimately, he's got 7.3 YPA on first downs, finished with 20 TD passes. He doesn't run, so obviously we just talked about that earlier. That was a big problem. But another issue here was the Rams' defense was just way better than I expected. I thought they were declining a little bit, not going to be arguably the best in football. So the setup was not great for Jared Goff fantasy, and certainly real life, he has his issues. Last week was kind of a weird game, and I will say that it could have gone differently if Henderson isn't tripped up at the 1 foot line. Then there's a goal line stand, and the Seahawks defense is just playing way better. They're actually have allowed the second fewest yards per play the last 3 weeks. It was the fewest until Buffalo last night. Over the last 7 games, they've allowed just 203 passing yards. And remember, this team was on pace to allow the most passing yards ever. They traded for Carlos Dunlap, and Jamal Adams and Shaq Griffin have gotten healthier. So that matchup wasn't as easy as it may have looked if you looked at just season-long stats last week. But this Rams offense is in trouble with John Wolford or whatever taking over. I mean, he hasn't attempted an NFL pass. So for Goff's problems, he at least knows how to run McVay's system, and broken throwing thumb entering the playoffs, not certainly ideal. Let's take a quick audit of this Rams team in general. I mean, Cooper Kupp scored a touchdown his final 5 games last year. He hasn't had his 1 TD since week 4 this year. I was falling for the Van Jefferson preseason hype. I mean, why did they talk him so much if he was going to be this useless? I mean, that is odd looking back at that. Tyler Higbee had 48 targets over the last month last year. He has 56 this season. It's definitely just not gone the way many expected. The Rams right now, or last I checked, I know entering last week, they had the number one rushing offense in DVOA, and yet that's produced zero valuable fantasy backs. I mean, how does that work? It's just been an odd year.
Yeah, Cam Akers looked like he was finally going to be the prince that was promised for this backfield, but obviously gets injured in week 15 against the Jets. And then Henderson gets injured last week, too. He's on IR. It might just be the Malcolm Brown show, which I know is, it's like a pet favorite of Sean McVay. Maybe this is all he really ever wanted, was just to have Malcolm Brown back there, the backup quarterback. I doubt it. But again, he is a coach's favorite type of guy. I noted this early in the season that these two receivers, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and then obviously the tight ends, none of these guys had any ceiling because Jared Goff is their quarterback. And I know people keep bringing up, well, Goff has had moments where he has had these monster games. It comes back to that 2018 game against the Vikings. That's 100 years ago in NFL time at this point. Yeah. And I remember that game. That was Goff was legit slinging it. It's not that Goff is, he's not a bad arm talent type of quarterback. He can make throws. Even in that same Super Bowl run to Brandon Cooks, he had a couple of absolute heaters. He's got the arm talent theoretically, but he's a net negative as a mover. That's at this point in the NFL, if you have no movement skills, you're leaving meat on the bone. That's number one. Number two, he makes bad decisions, not just mostly under pressure, But even now, like, it's starting to get to a point where he's making bad decisions when he's not under pressure. And against good fronts, and this is something that we can comment on the Seahawks too, they've started to become a tough pass rush team. You know, KJ Wright is playing great football too as a linebacker. Jamal Adams is obviously a blitzing playmaker. We know that. So this is the type of defense against Seattle last week that Goff would theoretically struggle against, but he's starting to kind of struggle against defenses where he shouldn't even do that. And I think the Rams are in trouble. Cooper Kupp is wide receiver 24 on the season. Robert Woods is wide receiver 12. But how often did Robert Woods win you a week in fantasy? Most of that is actually buoyed because he has 24 carries for 155 yards and 2 touchdowns as a rusher. So, yeah, I think the Rams offense is in trouble. I know they've got a ton of money tied up to Jared Goff, but I would love to see them bring in some competition or some sort of, you know, competent backup that isn't Wolford or Blake Bortles. Remember they had back Blake Bortles now because of the Goff injury. But yeah, it's pretty problematic right now.
A couple final thoughts on the Rams backfield. From what I've seen, I'm going to be aggressive on Akers next year. Probably just result in more of the same headache, whatever, but I'm just going to bet on him next year. I'm sure he will be the first of, obviously, of them to go, but he seems to me he's separated himself. But for week 17, or if you're playing DFS, Malcolm Brown with the backfield to himself against an Arizona defense that just made my guy Jeff Wilson look like Walter Payton could be very interesting. I know the quarterback situation there might be a problem, but Kyler Murray's banged up too. So I don't know. The Rams game script might not be horrific there. So Malcolm Brown and DFS, definitely intriguing week 17. What are your thoughts on, am I crazy for trying to go Cam Akers next year? Or do you think it's going to be more of a three-headed monster and Daryl Henderson's still there and all that?
I think you're on the right path there. I think that when he came onto the scene and like finally got caught up as a rookie, we talked to Jordan Rodrigue on the podcast in the offseason. She reported that, you know, they really loved Akers, but he was having a slower offseason because they're just trying to get him onboarded and get him up to date with this system. And it's a tougher rushing system to come into the NFL and master right away. I mean, Daryl Henderson has looked great when he's gotten the ball this year, but his eyes were not caught up to his feet and everything like he can do as a mover that wasn't there as a rookie. So it's that type of system where you're not just necessarily going to drop young players in and they're going to start to hit. But Akers, when he finally did get caught up later in the year and got healthy and everything like that, he was looking great and they were using him as a workhorse. I don't think they have any real reason. You know, even when Henderson was, we were singing his praises on this podcast, it's like PFF's number one ranked running back, yada, yada, yada. He wasn't a true every down 25 plus touches workhorse like Cam Akers was. Akers, I compare it to guys like Nick Chubb and Aaron Jones in the past, where their rookie years, I've been off on these guys because they're still in split backfields. Like, I didn't draft any Aaron Jones when he was a rookie and people were really excited about him, or it might have been his sophomore year or whatever. Nick Chubb, same thing, because Carlos Hyde was still there. But then those guys finished their breakout years strong in the second half, and then they've obviously been great in previous years. Cam Akers, I think, is the same type of thing. I didn't draft Cam Akers one single time because he was disgustingly priced as like a fourth, fifth round pick. Yeah. But then he finishes the year strong, and I think I'm going to be in on him next year. So I'm with you. A long way of saying that, basically.
Yeah, I remember last time we saw him, he was playing the second half of a game through a high ankle sprain, and Daryl Henderson saw zero snaps then. So I do think the coaching staff made it pretty clear who they value the highest as well.
Yeah, I think that we've definitely seen that. One more for things we hate to see. Bro, Jerry Jeudy, we talked about it earlier. I don't think drops matter. I don't think it's indicative of like this is going to ruin his career. And there's been some embarrassing article in the Denver Post, like citing catch rate, which is not all drops, like anyway, and like calling him a kid. That's some embarrassing discourse right there. We don't need to get into all that. But 5 drops against the Chargers last week. He's had a drop problem this year. He's like at a 20% drop rate on the season, which is the highest of, you know, relevant wide receivers. That's higher than our guy Deontay Johnson. What do we make about this? Because he's another guy like Johnson, gets open so easily. That was what he was known for coming into college, and I think that's translated to the pros, but some other issues have come here as well.
Oh, I used Drew Lock and Jerry Jeudy in DFS this week. Lock has had good success. He dominated this Chargers team last time he faced him against that cover three. So I watched Mr. Jeudy quite intently this week. And man, the guy's racked up air yards this season. I think he ranks fifth. Five is the same number of drops he had Sunday. I mean, it was back-to-back plays at one point in the first half. Then right afterward, another one in the end zone. And then Lock missed him wide open for a 70-yard TD that was all on Lock. And then just to finish it off, man, Jeudy drops a pass with 30 seconds left that would have probably resulted in the game going into overtime. So, I mean, all kinds of stats he left on the field. I mean, that could have been another 10 minutes of action. So five drops, very, very frustrating. But having said that, I'm going right back to him this week in DFS, $12 in Yahoo, Lock just 22 at home against the Raiders, 15 targets. I mean, man, that performance last week was obviously bad, having the Raiders feel not so bad taking Henry Ruggs over him. But I'm going right back to Jeudy, drops, whatever, it happens, whatever. But very frustrating, let me tell you. He was my least favorite player on the field this weekend.
I'm sure you were not enjoying the montage of just drop pass after drop pass. So the thing with Jerry Jeudy, he drops are one thing. I do think he struggles in contested situations, in tight physical coverage. And this was something that he struggled with at Alabama. You know, there's no way to really, this is the problem with drops discourse in general, is like, is that a drop or is that him losing the ball in a contested situation? I don't consider that. I think that and like Deontay Johnson just dropping passes over the middle of the field, those are two different things. Unfortunately for Jerry Jeudy is he's doing both right now. I think the drops thing is whatever. I'm not worried about that. I do think that you could question what is his ceiling as a wide receiver. Can he be a top 12 wide receiver in fantasy? Can he be a guy that's a wide receiver one every single year, when sure he gets open at all levels of the field, but if you're going to be an elite number one wide receiver, you've got to do that. And you've got to win the ball in tight situations. That's why I love a guy like Terry McLaurin, because he does both. And a guy like Allen Robinson, Stephon Diggs, Justin Jefferson, all of these enormous guys that have had these massive seasons, they do both. Davante Adams, another guy, does both. So can Jerry Jeudy be that player? I think that's the biggest question we have to ask about it, especially with next year. It's going to be really tough to parse out the targets here, because you've got Jerry Jeudy, you've got KJ Hamler as sort of a speed slot receiver, you've got Noah Fant coming off an up and down year, but when he's healthy, he's been pretty good. And oh, by the way, want to talk about a guy who in his rookie season struggled with drops and then became like the best 50-50 ball receiver in the NFL. Cortland Sutton's coming back next year, and I think Cortland Sutton's established as a fringe high-end two number one type of receiver, whereas Jerry Jeudy's still trying to find his way there. That is slightly problematic when you're projecting him for next season.
Great points. Couple things. Almost every week you'll find on Twitter a nice clip of Jeudy just dusting someone with his route running right at the line.
Oh, yeah. It's
very, very impressive, all that. But all the concerns you bring up are so valid, especially just his fantasy situation next year. Who knows who's playing quarterback? Who knows who's playing quarterback? But all those mouths to feed, Fant, Hamler, and Cortland Sutton. Do not forget how good he looked in the preseason. I mean, the hype on him was like, rank him as a top 10 fantasy wideout, even with the drafting of Jeudy. Like, this guy is going to be an alpha. Don't forget that when you try to talk yourself into Jeudy. And obviously last week it helped him, the 15 targets, with Hamler leaving concussed relatively early. So I still think don't overrate the drops, but it's certainly to the point of at least like eye-opening and kind of looking at that, like, what's going on here? I like him in DFS week 17. Next year, though, it's certainly a crowded situation with an uncertain quarterback situation as well.
Yeah, a lot of questions beyond the drops. Like, sure, that's an easy one to talk about, but there's a lot more to talk about with Jerry Jeudy there, and I think the Sutton thing is the biggest one. Cortland Sutton, I know this is not a guy that anybody likes right now because of all the injuries this year, but he was on a Kenny Golladay type of trajectory to me, where first year just can't get open, will occasionally win some contested passes, but drops too many, whatever, leaves plays on the field. Second season for both of these guys, they looked like, oh, they're ascending vertical threats and contested catch guys, big play players. I thought, like, Galladay's third season, I thought he transformed into a true number one type receiver. Obviously missed a bunch of time, and this is fourth season. Sutton, same type of way. He's a guy who was developing and like could have developed into a full field player. Maybe that happens in his fourth, like nominal fourth NFL season, but his third full season. So I agree with you. He's a player that I think I'll be highest on him among the Broncos pass catchers, despite the injury questions. But with that, Dalton, let's move into the last thing we're going to do here today. We're going to do one thing we got right, one thing we got wrong. If it's stat based, that'd be great, since this is the stat show. Like one metric that led you astray, one metric that kind of took you to the right direction on a player. Let's do the victory lap first, though. Let's start off positive, because why not, Dalton? We work hard all year. We might as well celebrate when we got something right. Give me something that you got right this year, and maybe a stat that helped guide you towards that.
Okay, so we both had Devontae Adams over Michael Thomas. I feel like that's pretty decent. I want to revisit our A.J. Brown versus Michael Thomas next year draft table at some point combo that we had.
That's right. Remember that? I forgot about that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting one with New Orleans' quarterback situation next year, and maybe Corey Davis gone. But I don't think A.J. Brown is going number one, like my bold prediction was, of receivers. But Devontae Adams is coming up pretty decent year. But I wrote a column saying Derrick Henry should go number one, you should consider. But man, I have a lot more to talk about in the got wrong part. But I'll say, I don't have a great stat for this one, but Jalen Hurts, I got him in every dynasty league I'm in. I stashed him in most super flexes, except the one Andy Behrens used him against me and lost in the playoffs. Ranked him, I think, as my quarterback 33. So like, he was my guy to get if you have all the backups. Roto World's blurb right now says he's coming off a relatively down week. This dude threw for 340 yards last week, 8.8 YPA, and ran for 70 in his third career start. I'm going to be all in on Hurts next year. I feel like, as he helped fantasy managers in the playoffs, especially Superflex leagues, he was one of the few I got right. What about you, Harmon?
I think for me, this is less like quantitative, unless you want to talk a specific series that I do that I shall not name drop here. You know, guys like Stephon Diggs and Keenan Allen, like making talent-based evaluations over like just focusing on the situation. And the Diggs thing, I think, is a more important lesson than the Allen one. Cause let me tell you what, buddy, like I'll perfectly admit that this might be a right for the wrong reasons type of thing. I thought that Tyrod Taylor would be a pretty good quarterback. I didn't think Justin Herbert was going to come in and throw for 4,000 yards and break the rookie touchdown record. So I might've gotten that evaluation right without like realizing the key component was a player that I didn't see coming, which was Justin Herbert. But Keenan Allen was great for a large part of this year because he's a great player. Stephon Diggs, I think, elevated a guy like Josh Allen, and Josh Allen then elevated him together because of the talent of this particular player. Like, players can truly transform situations. We get hyper-focused on, well, this is what the Bills offense has been. Well, sometimes maybe the stat is just your own imagination, right? Because if you had the imagination that a great player could come in and actually change the landscape of an offense around a young quarterback, you would have benefited from that situation. So it's less of a stat and more of just like a personal philosophy, which is sometimes you got to have imagination on things. But I'm going to talk about why they can also bite you on the wrong end of yourself in the next section. But anyways, Dalton, give me something that you got wrong this year and maybe a stat that led you astray.
Sure, man. Where to begin? I was too aggressive on the rookie backs. I certainly ranked CEH too high. I thought tight end was going to be deeper than ever. It turned out to be weaker than ever. So
worse than ever.
Yeah, no doubt. Josh Allen is a guy I will go with, Mr. Fireball, my local guy here. And I use CPAE, the completion percentage above expectation. I believe I probably overrated that stat. It really dinged Allen. It really hated Tom Brady last year, for sure. I had Ben Baldwin on one of our guest pod guys in August, and he basically said, you know, a lot of that does have to do with the system, but I was already dug in at that point. I mean, Josh Allen, for one thing, that stat cannot account for the fact that Allen is arguably the most improved player in the NFL this year, maybe inarguably the most improved player this year. So stats, you know, can't account for that. And some are more backward looking than forward thinking. But I would say CPAE and the advanced passing stats led me astray with guys like Josh Allen and Tom Brady, who certainly bounced back and were they were anything but inaccurate in 2020.
That is true. Sometimes there is no football stat that does not, that just highlights one player. That is almost impossible to do unless you're charting games and trying to put them into a quantifiable form. That being said, you're going to take in some variables of other players, because that's just how football works, man. You know, that is an important stat lesson in general, is that, yeah, sure, like Brady's, it's just, even like completion percentage over expectation, it's still completion percentage. And, you know, catch rate, just like we talked about for Jerry Jeudy, some of the reason that he's sub 50% catch rate is, yeah, he drops the ball, he doesn't catch everything that's thrown to him, but sometimes those throws are completely uncatchable. You know, you talk about a guy like Deontay Johnson has 5 deep ball receptions this year, but per Pro Football Focus, only 5 of the 18 have been catchable. So there's always going to be multiple variables there. You know, when we're looking at Josh Allen, like I said this a lot in the offseason, but you can never discount the fact that his rookie season, he's throwing to Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, and LeSean McCoy. And then here in his third season, he's throwing a Stephon Diggs, John Brown, and Cole Beasley. That's a pretty big transformational set there.
Let me follow one thing on that, Harmon. I'd say that's my biggest lesson from this is I'm going to value system more than specific players, I would say, moving forward. Like, you know, year two in LaFleur's system, Aaron Rodgers, maybe it's not so shocking that he's having a better year. The Buffalo system is just so, so good. And the Browns, the difference in coaching with Stefanski, look at Mayfield. So I don't know, maybe less looking at, oh, how that individual performed, of these crazy advanced metrics where we can look at every next gen stat, and just more so just bigger picture and who the infrastructure and the coordinators and all that maybe just matters far more than the actual players on the field.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing for us to be forward thinking and forward looking is trying to get ahead of the train there, right? Because if you saw Sean McVay, that was not a coaching hire that people were just, you know, hats off to. He was a young guy replacing a bit of a meme of a coach at this point, Jeff Fisher, but like a long established NFL coach, super young. But if you had gotten ahead of that train, you would have been all in on Jared Goff, who was a completely transformed player. You would have been all in on Todd Gurley after one of his most disappointing fantasy seasons, you know, all of those years ago back in 2017. Same thing with if you had been in on Brian Daboll, like taking the Bills offense, you would have profited. So there are situations where we can get that right and wrong. Same thing with the Browns this year too. Like we talked about Kevin Stefanski. I thought that was going to be, oh, well, this is where I go wrong, is sometimes I default too much onto player ability. Specifically with the wide receiver position, I think you could probably understand why I do this. But with Beckham, like, I ranked him at freaking wide receiver 8 because I basically was like, you know what, all the other noise out of it, Beckham's a great player. And, oh, by the way, I believe in this system. I believe in the Kevin Stefanski offense. I think he's going to create a bunch of layups for wide receivers. Didn't matter. The Mayfield to Beckham connection still wasn't there. And then, obviously, the other biggest problem with Beckham is, oh, he got hurt again. That tends to happen with this particular player. Definitely need to pay more attention to injuries. And another receiver, like I can sit here and tout the breakout receivers that I was right on this year. Marquise Brown, maybe not so much. Maybe it's going to be next year in 2021 with this player. But number one, I believed too much in the player. I think he's made some mistakes this year. He's closing the year strong. He scored in 4 of his last 5 games. But the bigger problem, I think, is that I was wrong about, again, the coaching situation and the general infrastructure, and also just didn't want to hear about the incoming regression for the Ravens offense. Because, yes, again, it's gotten back on track here to end the year, but for the most part of this year, this Ravens offense, whether it's Greg Roman's fault or just Lamar statistically regressing a little bit back to the general mean of the NFL, it has not been good here in 2020, outside of what they started to do once they got out of their COVID outbreak, which is obviously a variable here at this point in the NFL.
I was totally in on Marquise Brown as well. But bottom line, I apologize, Josh Allen. Man, what a season, dude. That graphic they ran his career now, I think he's up to 59 or 60 touchdowns with 0 interceptions in the red zone. Is that good? And he's just making those linebackers. Good. The linebackers are the ones that are getting injured on the sideline with those collisions. I thought Allen may get hurt, but no. Yeah, man, what a monster. Might only finish 3rd in the MVP, but great season and great fantasy season. And that guy's going to be drafted so, so super aggressively next year, and rightfully so. So, yeah, I got Josh Allen dead wrong this year.
Well, I think the lesson, more so than just don't value this particular stat or don't value this particular stat, is to be balanced, right? Because sometimes the numbers can tell you the story. Other times players' ability can tell you the story. But I would be a jackass if I sat here and told you, yes, always trust the talent, always trust the player, because that obviously went wrong in my evaluation of Marquise Brown, even if it went right in my evaluation of Stephon Diggs. And same sort of situation, whether it comes to completion percentage over expectation, there are plenty of times when that's led us to the right conclusion about a player, like, hey, Carson Wentz is terrible in completion percentage over expectation. Yep. Maybe get him off the field. And the Eagles offense might come back to life. So it's a balance there.
And it loved Tannehill. Tannehill finished first in the stat by a mile last year. So he appears to be far more real than fluke. So yeah, great point, Matt. Right. It's just a piece of the puzzle. Like all stats, man, just a piece of the puzzle.
So the number one lesson is be humble. Don't act like you got the skeleton key, because nobody has the skeleton key, whether it's a stat, whether it's their own eyeballs at player evaluation. We're all in this together. We're all working.
Easy to do when you're common goal. When you're predicting football, easy to stay humble, that's for sure.
And if you're not staying humble while trying to predict football, there's something that says something about you more than anyone else. All right, Dalton, that's it here for the midweek show, our last one of the year. I mean, this has been an awesome podcast to do with you. You've made me smarter. I hope we've made the listeners smarter together. Anyways, as we head here into week 17 and playoffs and then to the off season, plug your stuff, man. What you got coming up?
Yeah, they are having me do a week 17 sit start. So maybe I'll gear more toward DFS with that, but I'll be putting that out early. I'll be Thursday morning. And yeah, it was great doing the pod with you all year, Harmon. And I certainly hope we get to run it back and do it again next year.
That is the hope. Running it back next year, always the biggest hope for those of us who get to talk about football for a living, man. That's what a world. In the meantime, while you're missing our dulcet tones here on the midweek show and talking about all sorts of stats and the things we love to hate and see, check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor, the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our friend Pat Forty from SI, and Post It Up with Chris Haynes if the NBA suits your fancy, and it should. NBA is back. I'm so confused by the sports calendar because of coronavirus, but here we are. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Matt Harmon _ BYB. That's at Dalton Del Don. Tomorrow, Dalton, you're going to be back. You're going to join Liz for a New Year's weekend preview pod. But until then, we're out.